Good morning again. We will reconvene this hearing. The case is Badger Wind LLC, a request for a partial waiver of their light mitigation technology requirement. It's case number PU-24-087, July 1st, 2025 at 9:07. If someone signed in a little late or missed the previous announcement, just after 8:30, we were scheduled for 8:30. There was a snafu and things had to be worked out. And so we just gaveled in, announced that, and now we're reconvening. I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioner Sherry Haugenhoffert and Commissioner Jill Kringstad. So we are here, and in just a moment, I will just have everyone go around the room and identify themselves for the record and speaking into a microphone. I want to emphasize that this will be an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed details. If there is anything that is disputed, we'll have to wrap it up and go and schedule that into a formal hearing. But with that as a possibility that might have to happen, it was determined by representation for both sides that we would proceed with an informal, allows the company to present and the public that is signed in or here to hear their side of the case, for us to hear their case and ask any questions. And so in the meantime, as we would determine whether a formal hearing needs to be held or not, they can be responding to questions or things like that and just help the process move more quickly on into the future. Other than all that announcement stuff, I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugenhoffert, did you?
No.
And Commissioner Kringstad, this would be your portfolio now, although you weren't really here when the case was cited, so I'm not even sure of that detail, but did you have any opening comments?
I don't have any opening comments.
Then I'll have everybody go around, identify by name as well as, you know, your title if you're representing someone or what you do, and then we'll just turn it over to the company to make their presentation. And even though you're not in the room, Molly, would you also identify yourself on the record, please?
Yes, I will.
Go ahead.
Molly, start with you. We'll start online and then we'll go in the room.
Okay. So I'm Molly Smith with Fredrickson and Byron here on behalf of Badger Wind LLC.
Bridget Duffus with Fredrickson and Byron, also here on behalf of Badger Wind LLC.
Nick Bauer, representing Badger Wind LLC.
Brian Johnson, Public Service Commission.
Rob Frank, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Brendan Denny, Badger Wind LLC.
Darcy Nigam with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Steve Call, PSC.
And Clayton is running the equipment over there. So, okay, go ahead. Who's kicking it off for Badger?
I can kick it off.
Okay. Go ahead, please, Bridget.
Yep. So, good morning. Nick Bauer is going to give a short presentation explaining why we're here.
Okay, go ahead. And you need to have the microphone fairly close to you.
Okay. Great intro. Thank you. So, yeah, as Bridget mentioned, I have about 7 minutes presentation and a handful of slides. My name is Nick Bauer. I represent Badger Wind LLC.
And would you spell your name, please?
Yes. G E B as in boy, A U E R. Very okay. German last name. So this is the request for partial waiver of light mitigation technology requirement for the Badger Wind Farm, which is located in Logan and McIntosh counties. So Badger Wind submitted this request for a partial waiver of requirement to install light mitigation technology for 9 of the 92 turbines that comprise the wind farm. We received a lighting and marking plan from the FAA in which 83 of the 92 turbines are allowed to use ADLS as expected. However, the FAA is requiring that 9 turbines require standard lighting rather than ADLS to ensure safe operations for aircraft leaving Wishick Municipal Airport at nighttime or low light conditions. Since ADLS is the only light mitigation technology approved by the FAA, a waiver is warranted based on technical infeasibility for just those 9 turbines. So I wanted to take a couple minutes to walk through the steps from the last time we presented to the PSC for the CSC amendment and today. So Badger Wind received the amended CSC on September 11th, 2024. And then shortly afterwards, on September 27th, we filed our final engineering design drawings with the PSC depicting the final turbine layout. And none of the turbine locations changed in that final design from what was approved in the CSC. Once the turbine layout was finalized and fully approved, we were then able to kick off the final steps in the lighting and marking process, which takes typically about 4 to 6 months. We worked with DTECT, the ADLS provider for the project, to finalize the radar location, the tower height, and also put together the FAA submittal package, which was submitted to the FAA along with the DNH request and the lighting and marking plan request on January 14th of this year. The FAA issued the determination of no hazard on February 6th, and then shortly afterwards on February 12th, the FAA issued the initial marking and lighting plan for the project. That initial plan actually denied ADLS for 19 turbine locations. So in response, we engaged Capital Airspace Group, a top-tier airspace consultant, to build a case for why additional turbines should be allowed to utilize ADLS. We were able to schedule a meeting with the FAA on March 19th to discuss the ADLS denials generally and then also the justification for why additional turbines should be allowed to use ADLS. So we were working to try to increase the number of ADLS turbines. Based on the successful discussions with the FAA, they reevaluated the lighting and marking plan and issued a revised plan which approved ADLS for 83 of the turbines and reduced the number of ADLS denials and standard turbines to 9. This maximized the use of ADLS for the project site per the FAA. So with this information in hand, on April 16th, we submitted this request for partial waiver. And then just for review, the project is well on track for both the project and also the ADLS system to come online in December of this year. And so this first map shows the 19 turbine locations that were originally required to utilize standard lighting by the FAA. So the 9 dots in blue are the 9 turbines that are still required to use standard lighting. The 10 dots that are purple are the turbines that were originally required by the FAA to use standard lighting, but based on the reevaluation, we are now able to use ADLS for those 10 locations, so long as the 9 turbines in blue use standard lighting. The reason for this reevaluation is primarily due to a concept called shielding, which actually I'm gonna go to the next slide, it shows a little bit better. So this is a zoom in of the project map in the area of Wishick Municipal Airport. The blue dots, again, are the turbines that are requiring standard lighting still, and the purple dots are those that were reevaluated to allow ADLS. So if you imagine an airplane taking off from Wishick Municipal Airport, the pilot is going to see the turbines in blue first. And we were able to successfully agree with the FAA that also requiring standard lighting on the purple turbines would be redundant from the view of a pilot taking off from the airport. And so rather, the FAA is allowing us to utilize ADLS at those purple dots so long as we light the turbine that's in front of it or shielding their view. And then rather, the purple turbines will turn off or turn on when the plane is detected by the ADLS radar as designed. So for example, turbine 71, let's see this clicker. Okay, great. So turbine 71 is now allowed by the FAA to utilize ADLS up in the northeast portion of the zoomed in map, so long as turbine T-70A utilizes standard lighting in low light and nighttime conditions. If T-70A was not there, then turbine T-71 would be required to utilize standard lighting. So I point out this shielding concept to also say that it's not just as easy as removing the 9 turbines that were denied, because then the FAA would require that the next turbines outside of it be lit. So then ultimately, these are the 9 locations that are required by the FAA to utilize standard lighting. This map was also provided as Attachment A in the filing, and it's only for these 9 turbines that we're requesting this waiver. So then in conclusion, based on technical infeasibility, Badger Wind is requesting that the commission grant this waiver for light mitigation technology requirement for just the 9 turbines that are identified in blue near the Wishick Municipal Airport. Badger Wind, similar to the Basin Electric Prairie Winds project that was granted a waiver in 2021, also will commit to reviewing the FAA-approved light mitigation technology and submit a report at least every 3 years to determine if the project should have this waiver continue based on continued technical infeasibility or if an acceptable light mitigation technology system could be approved by the FAA and then implemented at these 9 locations. And so with that, I will pause for questions, and yeah, thank you all.
Thank you for this. This, this whole concept of shielding, I don't think was anywhere in the initial filing, so that this was helpful. Has the FAA given any indication about like how far away from airports like the shielding may apply? Like, is there a certain distance where then it doesn't matter? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So it isn't a firm distance. So the FAA regulations specify that the FAA reviews ADLS approvals on a case-by-case basis, and that they'll take into account areas of high use. I can actually pull the exact language if helpful. The exact language, approval of an ADLS will be on a case-by-case basis and can be modified, adjusted, or denied based on proximity of the obstruction or group of obstructions to airports, low-altitude flight routes, military training areas, or other areas of frequent flight activity. It may be appropriate to keep certain obstructions closest to these known activity areas illuminated during the nighttime, while the remainder of the group's lights are controlled by ADLS. So essentially, they relied on that this is the closest to the airport, and out of an abundance of caution, they wanted to keep those closest ones lit using standard light.
What I'm still processing is, like, I understand what you're saying about if you kind of the cascading effect of if you removed those 9 or, then the ones behind it would need it. But I guess what I'm still trying to work through is, like, at what point, though, and maybe we just don't know, but at what point do they say, like, it's far enough, you know, everything can have ADLS?
Yeah, it is really at the discretion of the FAA. Mm-hmm. There is a distance in the ADLS design. So when you're designing the radar and doing the viewshed analysis, you look out at least 3 nautical miles from every wind turbine. So that could be used as a threshold by the FAA, but it is like very case by case based on their subjectivity.
Have you guys, has the company looked at any other potential alternatives that would comply with ADLS besides a waiver?
So unfortunately, ADLS is the only approved technology.
Mm-hmm.
There was LIDS being discussed, but that ultimately wasn't approved by the FAA. So unfortunately, there isn't a light mitigation technology alternative besides this waiver right now.
And are these, can you give me an update on like the status of these 9 turbines? Are they like planned to be built, under construction, already up? What's the status of those turbines?
Yeah, so generally the wind farm is under construction. There's folks there today, you know, doing a bunch of civil work. These locations haven't been constructed yet. The wind turbines are starting deliveries, you know, within the next month. But we've done civil works, I think, for some of these turbines. And then, yeah, the landowners are certainly expecting these turbines to be built, and they've been staked accordingly.
I think that's all my questions for now. But
I just want to be clear on the standard lighting. Will that be at dusk? Will those standard lights be on at all times for navigation purposes?
The standard synchronized red light that will be on like during nighttime or low light situations.
And then the ADLS comes on when there's air traffic notification.
Correct.
So looking at, I don't remember, I know we talked a lot about in the hearing about the airport, but it was more communication. It wasn't the lighting. What is the distance on that lighting that's going to be on all the time from like a local residents or the community? Because this is close to Wishik. Do we know the proximity now with this lighting on to the residents?
Yeah, so the majority of residents live in Wishik.
Yep.
We're probably a couple miles from there. There are some residents that live outside of town.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the turbines are closer than that 2 mile distance.
Do you foresee any concerns with that standard lighting impacting local residents? And if so, have you thought about any type of, is it possible to do any light mitigation?
So the last part, it's not possible per FAA. We have to comply with their orders. But in terms of landowner communications, we did reach out to the county, to the commissions. We also sent letters to the turbine or the landowners that are hosting turbines that now utilize standard lighting, and then followed up with folks that didn't respond back with phone calls and in-person visits. So the general sentiment was that, you know, they understood and they deferred to the FAA. And understand that safety, you know, is an important priority. There was one landowner that expressed, like, disappointment, they called it, in the FAA decision. But then when the conversation moved to, you know, what do you think about the turbine generally, they said they still strongly prefer that the turbine be built, even with standard lighting, than not be built at all. So generally, the feedback's been pretty neutral.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Thank you for being proactive on that. And, you know, it's one thing to, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it continues down that path.
Yeah.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I have a couple legal questions on just our ability to even grant this? In your application for this, and I believe it's docket number 93, the April 16th letter, you mentioned that the content requirements for a request related to light mitigating technology are specified in North Dakota Administrative Code 6906.11.02, subsection 7. Subsection 7 is for an extension, not a waiver. Tell me how to evaluate that, because you're requesting a waiver, although you almost make it sound like an extension since you say you're going to report back at least every 3 years. So I don't know what it is exactly that you're asking for. And if it's a waiver, I don't see how that administrative rule authorizes it.
We're requesting a waiver for the use of light mitigating technology on these 9 turbines. As far as the content requirements that were cited, this rule doesn't specify content requirements for a waiver request. So it was the closest applicable, and it's what has been applied in the past. The authority under which you can grant the waiver is North Dakota Century Code 4922-16.4, subsection 2.
Okay, I understand where the law allows us to grant them, but then we have rules for how we are going to do that were accepted by Legislative Administrative Rules Committee. And subsection 7 that you cited is for an extension, not a waiver.
Yes, and that's just the content requirements for the request. And this, I will say that this waiver, it has been granted by the commission in the past, and these were the rules and subsections that were applied in the past. So we followed precedent in that respect.
Except for the one that was granted in the past, earlier in 6906.11.02, earlier it's divided up between projects that received their certificates before and after June 5th of 2016. And the one that was granted was for a project that was before. This is a project that's after, and they're separate sections. And it's not like waivers were completely off the commission's radar screen when these were granted, because in that section, section 3 says that a waiver may be granted for projects no more than 5 megawatts. So it's not like we didn't think of waivers as a possibility. It says for projects cited before June 5th of 2016, which is that's the Basin case. I think that was at least 15 years ago. It was way before 2016.
2009, yeah.
It says the commission may grant an extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. However, the section before that, for the projects certified after June 5th of 2016, that sentence isn't in there. So I don't know that our rules really allow this.
So the statute, the 4922-16.4, was amended, I believe, in 2020 to explicitly allow the commission to grant waivers for projects like this that were granted their certificate of site compatibility after June of 2016. So the statutory amendments would govern here, allowing a waiver in this circumstance.
And if I may, Commissioner, basically the rules have not been amended to align with the statute.
Well, doesn't not amending them, when the rules lay out different types of projects and for what we, how we will view waivers and extensions, and then the law catching up to our rules and saying that we may do that, what we had already done, and us not amending them, isn't that just the law catching up to our rules and us saying we're sticking by our rules that
no.
The commissioner that's no longer here had brought this concept to us and we studied it for a long time and got very positive feedback from the public and some positive, some negative feedback from developers. And we laid out a plan for how we were going to do it. We actually implemented the rules. The law was passed giving us actually authorization to make those rules. And we have not decided to change them. We stuck by them and that we would hold the new projects to this standard. Didn't go back in time and require it for old projects since they couldn't have known about it. But ever since then, all new developments have come in, and I'm just concluding here based on what we heard from Nick that the other projects must have stayed far enough away from airports that the FAA didn't require this, where this one has pushed the limit until FAA requires this, and I haven't heard yet if you removed. And there were, I think, 9 or 10 alternate sites that were approved in the siting the siting certificate. If you push some of these out, we just haven't heard yet what distance the FAA is going to require this, but we've not had it on the other developments where projects were planned and developed and built. And the FAA did not require these buffer standardized light turbines. So respond to that, please.
Yeah, so I think we're going to take that in two parts. Molly, I'll let you jump in on the legal part, and then I do want Nick to address the alternates question there.
Agreed. That sounds good. So on the legal part, the statute would control, and the rules come after the statute. So while you may decide you don't want to grant a waiver, you do have the authority to do that under the statute. And the decision in Basin was very recent, 2021, I believe.
But their project was certified way before we were even had heard of ADLS, and so thus the rules, everything looks at that differently than new developments, knowing that people in North Dakota seem to want ADLS systems on.
That may be true, but I just saying you do have the authority to grant the waiver based on a technical infeasibility.
Okay.
Molly, quickly before we move on to that, how do you intend to comply with the December 31st, 2019 deadline then?
Obtain the waiver.
But it's technically impossible.
It wouldn't be the 2019. It'd be 2021. So it's subsection 3.
No, it falls under subsection 2 because this is issued a site certificate of compatibility after June 5th of 2016.
Can jump in there the same way okay. that new projects that got their CSC after in after 2019 would comply with that timing. It reads a little funny because it was written at a specific time, but just like new projects that are being permitted now can comply with that even though they won't be constructed until many years after 2019.
Well, when that bill was introduced, I argued with them to remove that because I had previously drafted a version where that was removed to avoid this, but they insisted on leaving it in, and I'm not so sure that that date staying in there doesn't cause some issues.
It doesn't, because we've done it in the past, and it's always been with COD.
I guess then the argument that the amendment in 2021 to add this language in, I think there's still some issues there, I think, that I haven't exactly fully worked through yet.
I think all that the legislation did was add in the ability to grant a waiver and extension to those projects that were permitted after 2019 or received their certificate after 2016, however you want to think about it. Basically, this comes from the Russo situation.
Can you give an overview on that, Molly, for content?
Sure. So in the Russo Wind Project, that project wanted to install ADLS, but was told by the Department of Defense that they wouldn't support it because they're close to ICBMs. And so they knew they were not going to be able to get ADLS approval, and they were seeking a certificate of site compatibility at that time. And they made the argument, we made the argument, that the commission could allow the permit to be issued because they need to defer to the FAA's regulations. Ultimately, there was a decision that that couldn't move forward. And as a result, the legislature amended the statute to specifically allow a waiver extension provision for those projects that were permitted after June 5th, 2016.
Then I think Nick was going to add something too.
Yes, and just regarding the alternates. So based on our discussions with the FAA, our understanding is there'd be 19 turbine locations that would be at risk here if a waiver is not granted. If we are able to relocate 9 of them using alternates, that's still a decrease in the project capacity of the 10 turbines to 28 megawatts, which equates to a loss in project value of about $60 million. But also importantly, it's $12 million less given to landowners in direct payments, $4 million less in state and local property taxes. And it's essentially a different project than what was approved in the CSC, and a different project than what MDU is looking to buy into. So, you know, it's not just the 9 turbines. It is, because of this cascading effect and that shielding concept, you know, a very material change in the project characteristics.
So I can't write fast enough to have taken all that down. Will you provide that just in a written form, that we have those statistics? I would like those.
I can also repeat it too, if that's easier.
I think it's easier if you just provide it.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Yeah. Just for my clarification too, if you go back a slide, Nick, is it like those cascading effects apply if you go all the way to the south of the project on, you know, the T-115, that has shielding there throughout the entire stretch? Is that kind of what's going on? Or is it just the purple ones that are affected from the shielding?
So the purple ones are the ones that the FAA initially denied. But the blue turbines is essentially the ring of turbines that's closest to the airport.
Right, but if you got rid of one of the blue ones,
yes,
there's still a shielding component going on to the turbine next to it, do you think? Or is that not confirmed? So, like, T-80 is right next to T-79, and if you move T80, then T79 would have that issue, same issue as the turbine 80, right?
That's correct. It would just move, you know, which turbine would need to be lit.
And so just to kind of clarify, I know the question was asked before, there's the discretion that the FAA has for the ADLS. Is there just a minimum distance that you could put in initially to when you're modeling or trying to figure out the turbine locations from an airport that would just take care of everything? Or is it, or did they just kind of model a distance or put something in there that was kind of like a guess or something like that? Or how did that work out? Is that, because I know that you factor in so many different complexities into that to try to pick the locations. And so something had to be assumed for the airport. Is that correct?
Yes. So, you know, generally there was, an iterative process designing this layout with the airports because we are close to that airport. So we had a lot of discussions with the airport staff, the North Dakota Aeronautics Commission, as we were designing the original layout. And then we received the determinations of no hazard for all of the turbine locations where they are now. After we removed 5 turbines to support aircraft future plans.
Does the no hazard, does that come from the FAA?
It does, okay. Yeah. And so that's partly too why the ADLS conclusion that the FAA came to was a bit of a surprise because we did receive those determinations of no hazard, which state that the turbines can safely be there. But then the FAA is requiring this ADLS not being used at those 9 turbines, kind of out of an abundance.
So was there a misunderstanding, or just the FAA didn't receive the information that they were going to be ADLS? Was that a safe distance, no hazard? Did they grant the no hazard assuming standard lighting? Is that kind of what happened? Or
yeah, so that is standard. You originally get DNHs using standard lighting. And then you go back to the FAA and request the study once the layout is finalized and fully approved, because they look at that as a whole project based on what's actually going to be built.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
On this case, just to recap, didn't you have alternative sites for turbines? And just recap for me, like, if these, based on the concerns from the FAA, you chose not to do any relocation of it? Help me understand that, because there was quite a few. Go ahead, recap it for me.
Yes, so we had 9 or 10 mm-hmm. Alternate locations that were approved. But because of the shielding effect, we can't get rid of like the ADLS turbines themselves.
The ones behind it, like T71, if you remove T70A because of the shielding, you would still have that.
Correct. Yeah. So we don't have the alternates to fully mitigate this situation. And then the turbines that were located, you know, were to optimize the project design, make sure that we can capture as much energy as we can from the wind. And which also, you know, increases the value of the project, and also landowner payments and taxes, which are also tied to production.
So I'm guessing this probably doesn't have to do with the ADLS stuff for the project, but as we work through this and try and figure out what we can and can't do and what we should and shouldn't do, just a little side thing keeps gnawing at me. The certificate allowed 93 turbines, and I think there were 9 alternates, but regardless of the alternate number, it was 93. And now this is a waiver for 9 of the 92. What happened that made it switch from 93 to 92?
Yeah, so the CSC allowed us to build up to 93 turbines. That's to make sure that we're optimizing the use of the interconnect. So the nameplate capacity could actually be a little bit higher than the maximum amount that we're injecting onto the grid. So that up to 93 was just to allow us to you know, optimize the interconnect that we had.
Okay, and but then as you researched further, you found out that with 92 of them, you can get up to your interconnection capacity. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions on distance things. So I need to look at this, so I'm not going to avoid eye contact with you on purpose. But so when I look at the purple versus the blue dots on here, so like down towards the bottom left there, there's T66B and T67B that are black, but they're in between a blue and a purple dot. So were those never identified as by the FAA as needing maybe not being approved for ADLS or... I'm just trying to figure out how those kind of fit into the equation.
Yeah, so it's a good question and a good spot. So, curiously, those were...
Nick, yes, when you turn your head, would you bring microphone over?
Yes.
The recording's pretty important. Too. So,
so turbines 67, and I believe 68, weren't originally identified by the FAA as requiring standard lighting. To be honest, we aren't sure exactly why. Again, the FAA process is a subjective process. It may have been initial consideration of this shielding concept because it is between two turbines that the FAA was asking for standard lighting, but we did not confirm that with them.
Okay. And then would you be able to provide the distance from the airport of... certainly all of the turbines in blue and in purple on that map? Because I think you used a reference to 3 miles when you were doing some explanation of like what you've seen previously or what a guideline is that they've used historically. Would you, I guess, I don't know, maybe you know exactly how far all of these are, if they're farther than the 3 miles.
Yeah, as we were trying to reverse engineer essentially why the FAA... denied the turbines that they did. It does work out to pretty closely to that 3 nautical miles. It's not exact. So some turbines that were within 3 nautical miles were approved by the FAA to utilize ADLS. Some that were outside were denied, but that's pretty close to that delineation between black dots and purple dots is okay. Pretty close to that 3 nautical mile distance.
Okay. Would you be, with what you're filing later, would you be able to file the distance for each of the blue and purple dots
from the airport? Can. Yeah.
Thank you. And then one other one. So the airport itself, that orientation, that is that the one and only runway?
That is.
That airport, and that's the orientation of it? Okay. So they would either be taking off to the northwest or to the southeast?
Correct.
And landing in the opposite?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, just a couple more questions because I've been sitting with this for a while, so I'm going to ask just so I don't make assumptions about what you guys are thinking. So there's been a lot of reference to like past precedent with like the Basin Electric waiver, right? So when I went back and reviewed that case, I guess there were kind of two things that stuck out to me there. So I just want to bring them up and give you guys a chance to respond. The first was, kind of like we mentioned, that site certificate was issued back in 2009. So that project was already built and in existence. Or like this one is still under construction, right? So like it seems like we may have some leeway. Maybe we don't, but like to me, that's a very... That's a differentiation or a different factor. Then the other one was, yes, the Basin project had issues with FAA, but that was due to the fact that it was in proximity to Minot Air Force Base. And when you dig into that, it required not only approval from Minot Air Force Base, but also the U.S. Air Force. I found it interesting because at the time, the U.S. Air Force, it said, was working on a global solution and wasn't making determinations on a per-project basis, which seems to kind of be the opposite of what FAA is doing right now, doing everything on like a project-by-project basis. And their biggest concern was with the ICBM sites and the proximity to those, that it was a national security issue. So, like, can you just respond to both of those for me? I think that'd be helpful.
Yep. I think I'm going to take the second one first. So, in Basin, they reached out proactively to the Air Force Base, I believe as a result of what went down in Russo, because they understood that ADLS might be a concern when it came to ICBMs or military training sites. Mm-hmm. They knew that the Prairie Winds One site surrounded an ICBM site. Mm-hmm. And so while their ADLS approval was still pending with the FAA, they reached out and had the Air Force Base had concerns with ADLS. Here, there are no concerns from Air Force Base in regards to ICBMs or other training facilities. Mm-hmm. So it's two different concerns, essentially. In Basin's case, it was because of the location and proximity to military training facilities and sites. Mm-hmm. And the FAA hadn't actually issued a denial of ADLS at the time that Basin sought the waiver. They just anticipated it would because of the Air Force Base's concerns. Okay. So it was the anticipated FAA denial that was the basis of the technical infeasibility determination or argument. Here, we don't have concerns from the DOD, the Air Force Base, or anything like that. It's mm-hmm. the FAA has made a determination that standard lighting must be used on those 9 turbines for the taking off of airplanes from the airport. So we don't have the Air Force Base having any concerns here. And that also explains like the difference in the timing, where we had to wait for a determination from the FAA on the lighting plan, whereas because of the military issues in Prairie Winds 1, they were able to kind of get a sense of what was going to happen before they actually got a determination from the FAA. Does that answer that question?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And as far as Prairie Winds 1 already being constructed and had been operating since, I think, the end of 2009, the statute and the rules both contemplate waivers in both situations. So an operating project before the rules went into effect and a project that was built after. So that one just happened to be operating mm-hmm. already, and this one is still under construction. And as Nick explained, they did extensive coordination with the FAA to maximize the use of ADLS on this site and really balance the interests of safety, mm-hmm. which is the primary concern when you're dealing with lighting and airports and all that, as well as minimizing impacts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
How soon in the process do you start communicating with the FAA on ADLS mitigation?
So with the FAA, we didn't, because we, kind of similar to previous projects, we hadn't received any indications that ADLS was going to be a problem, and instead we're focusing on the DNHs, which we had expected to indicate that, you know, the FAA would approve the wind farm and, mm-hmm. by extension, the ADLS. So we didn't have explicit, though, coordination with FAA regarding ADLS, to answer your question.
And my whole intent of my question is because it was so close to an airport, I'm looking proactively in other cases as to address some of this when we have an application, just looking at that. So I think you had something else to add.
Yeah, and Nick can explain this further, but the FAA requires basically certain developmental milestones and certainty before they can do the lighting plan and look at everything, one of which is the ADLS tower location, which requires like a line of sight analysis of the entire wind project and all of the turbine locations. If you move any of the turbine locations through the CSE approval process or anything like that, you have to redo, and it changes the line of sight analysis for the radar tower. So that's why the location of the radar tower was not finalized until after the layout was finalized by this commission granting the amended CSC. So that's kind of the steps in the process and why you can't really get ADLS approval earlier on, even at the time that you're getting your initial DNHs, because you don't have that final approved layout that then you can do your radar line of sight analysis. Because if you change any of the locations, like, for example, in the amendment process, I think we removed a couple of turbine locations from the time the amendment application was submitted to the hearing. Didn't move any turbines after that, but that still shows there's a little bit of micro-siting and some changes that happen, because we had the DNHs, I believe, at the time of hearing or shortly thereafter. So in order to make sure that you're coming to the FAA for the lighting plan approval with the final layout, you do have to wait, unfortunately.
When makes was sense. The initial submission to the FAA?
Just for clarification, for the DNHs or for the ADLS?
For the ADLS.
So that was January 16th, I believe.
Of 2025?
Correct, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. January 14th.
And just to clarify, that 3 nautical miles that we're talking about, is that like rule, guidance, like what is that exactly from FAA?
Yeah, the origin of that distance is actually, as Bridget was talking about, you do the line of sight analysis. Mm-hmm. So we have to show, to get ADLS approved for the wind farm, that radar can see the entire airspace at least 3 nautical miles from all of the turbines. And within that 3 nautical miles, once an airplane is detected, then the lights turn on if it's a nighttime or low light situation. So that's the origin of the 3 nautical miles, is that the ADLS has to react when something enters that 3 nautical mile distance. So presumably they used that number for the airport because, you know, a plane takes off, it's 3 nautical miles of reaction that they want to make sure to protect in a, like, worst case, lowest scenario.
But is that like a formal FAA rule that it needs 3 nautical miles of reaction time?
So the formal rule is that the ADLS tower has to turn on the lights within 3 nautical miles.
From FAA. Okay. Yes.
Any other questions or comments?
Not in regards to the matter at hand, but we will need to get a date set to schedule the public hearing for this as well, so we can get the publication out.
Okay, I'll have staff, I'll assign you to work on that with commissioners to get the earliest possible date.
Good.
For that. Is that something that should be scheduled and held, or is that to find a date when it would work and then do a notice of opportunity?
I don't think a notice of opportunity gets us there. It says there must be a public hearing.
Okay. So what we need to do is find a date as soon as possible for that hearing.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else on that topic? All right, with that, thank you, everyone, and sorry about the little confusion at the beginning there and delaying things. Yeah. Thanks. I almost forgot. So we've received this information this morning, and by the information, I'm talking about the recording, so everything that's been said, as well as the handout, I believe was the only paperwork that was submitted. Are there any objections to that evidence becoming a part of the record upon which the commission will make a decision on this request?
No objection.
Okay. None from staff.
Okay, so the evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision is made. Are there any other, anything else for the record?
I just want to note that we will file the two bits of requested information as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you. With that, this hearing is closed.